Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we now turn to Bloomberg Business Week's Robin Farzad, who sent us an email last week that said, "The Dow just broke 16,000 and keeps setting records. The good and bad news, investors are now pouring more money into stocks than they have in 13 years. So let's talk about why that's good and bad news, and the very real possibility that average investors are rushing into the stock market at the very moment that financial insiders are warning of a serious market correction on the horizon." Hey, Robin, welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, good morning.
So is the best thing I can get from my loved ones on this Cyber Monday a few tech stocks?
Oh, gosh, you remind me of that incident. It was December of 1999. I was having lunch at Shunley Palace on the Upper East Side, and there's a waiter who could not speak a spit of English but kept trying to ask me something when he noticed I worked for a brokerage firm. It was on my corporate Amex. And so I said, "Well, you didn't swipe my card. Will you at least swipe the card before, you know, we say something?" And he's like, he takes a couple paces, walks back. He tries to say something again and laughs. I said, "You didn't swipe my card." I summon the maitre d' over. They huddle, and then they come out of it chuckling. And the maitre d', and I'm saying it in his accent, is, "He wants to know what you think of the Qualcomm stock." And, of course, the stock market crashed shortly after that.
So I guess that's why you wrote recently that mom and pop have terrible timing. Is this a classic part of the boom and bust cycle?
Sadly, it has been. Buy high, sell low. We saw it happen, obviously, in 1999 and 2000. These are the biggest inflow numbers since that fateful year of 2000. And we saw it again after they were burned between 2000 and 2002. They came back hesitatingly at the end of 2007, just in time for the subprime crash. And you have some sophisticated investors out there, notably Jeremy Grantham, warning about the next big retail investor-led cataclysm, the third one in 10 years that is in the offing after the market has its final leg up.
So I don't put any stock in any predictions about stocks, whether we're headed for a crash, whether we're headed for a Dow 36,000. Wasn't that a book that came out a few years ago?
Oh, yeah. You could buy it for 15 cents on Amazon.
Now you can. But there are some who think that we're headed for something other than a profit-taking correction, with the Dow now at 16,000 and the NASDAQ above 4,000 for the first time in more than a decade?
Well, all bets are off when you talk about potential hot retail money entering the equation. Mind you, hot retail money has staged something that I call the great evacuation for the better part of the past 5 years. Investors have yanked something like $400 or $500 billion from stock funds. This is while the market was up nearly 200% in total return terms since March of 2009. At the same time, you saw nearly $1 trillion sluice into bond funds. Bonds are about to have their first loss as a group since 1999. So if there is what is now being called a great rotation, they got to coin these terms. They got to get royalties for them. That money could turn into hot money that pours into the stock market and could make things pretty parlous next year.
Listeners, we have some time for calls here, and I wonder if your experience recently or over the course of your lifetime bears out what Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Business Week has been writing about. If you're someone who shied away from stocks after the 08 crash and decided when the Dow got all the way down to, what was the low? Was it like 6,500?
Yeah, 6,500, and that was the low that it saw in March of 2009. That was a 12-year low.
So if you had the stomach for that, to buy into that, boy, did you make some money since then. Or maybe now you're starting to dip your toe back in because you finally trust that maybe this recovery is for real and is sustainable. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you're not J.P. Morgan Chase or Fidelity or, you know, pick your one, and you're just trying to figure out what to do with your money, what precipitated the decision to get into or out of the stock market? And for that matter, where are you looking for advice? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Robin, of course, the other side of the equation is that if you keep money in an old-fashioned savings account, which, you know, used to earn 5%, and that was considered modest, you're not earning any interest.
Yeah, and you're losing money in real terms. It's been called financial repression. The Fed has kept interest rates at zero at emergency levels for the past 5 years now, since December of 2008. And if you factor in inflation and the fact that you'd be lucky if you're collecting 0.5% a year, you're actually losing money in real terms. And you compare that to what the stock market has offered. Again, it's up close to 200% in total return terms, with dividends included, since March of 2009. And over time, that becomes a more painful position, just to remain stacked in cash and closing your eyes forever on the stock market.
And a lot of this, I think it's fair to say, is the result of conscious government policy, particularly the Fed's decision to keep interest rates so low under Ben Bernanke and the subsequent rush toward the stock market, where people might make some kind of return. We posted a chart on our website that you flagged for us. Listeners, you can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and see just how assets held by the Fed as compared to the rise in the stock market track each other so closely, almost exactly. So as the Fed has brought up more and more bonds, as they bought up more and more bonds, they buy these government bonds, and that helps the stock market soar at the same rate. Does that mean that Ben Bernanke is buying into trickle-down economics, the thing that Pope Francis went after last week in his statement? Because if you make things as comfortable as possible for investors in the stock market, then the rest of the economy will start to take care of itself?
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head. Of course, the Federal Reserve and its mandate is not allowed to go out and buy risk assets such as stocks or junk bonds. But what it could do is transitively buy government bonds or government-backed mortgage securities and hope that that money trickles down in terms of institutional investor interest as yields collapse in those government-preferred issues. People end up going into junk bonds. And then once they exhaust the opportunity in junk bonds, they go into high-grade corporates. And then after high-grade corporates, you jump the ledger and you go into the stock market. First, they do it with big blue-chip companies. And then when that gets exhausted, they go into junky things. And now suddenly you have the NASDAQ at 4,000, levels it hasn't seen since the great year of 2000.
Are you really saying that people who can't get a decent return on their long-term yields are rushing to the stock market to make a quick buck? Isn't there a middle ground between socking some money away at, one-tenth of 1% return, which is, I think, what the typical savings account pays now, and buying Tesla stock and hoping for 250% return in 3 weeks?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tesla, because I, as a financial journalist, I have a supplemental data point for your listeners. I have something called the Iranian Contrarian Relative Index.
I love it.
And when I get relatives, when I have cousins and great uncles who I've never heard from calling me from Tarangelis and saying, Farzad, I know your mother. What do you think of the Tesla stock? Is it good? I saw the Tesla. They can't keep them in the dealerships. I know to turn around and then tell your listeners it's time to get out of Tesla stock. And that's been happening in spades. And no offense, my mother and my mother-in-law asked me about Tesla within 5 minutes of one another.
That's a great Iranian-American story there. But is there a middle ground?
I aim to please.
Is there a middle ground?
There aren't other opportunities. You used to have – I mean, what did they tell me in my bar mitzvah? My dad said, well, if you get an envelope and you stuff it in your coat pocket, you know, you want to put that in Series E savings bonds, or you want to buy government bonds. This is back when things yielded 6, 7, or 8%. Right now, it's pretty binary. You're getting nothing from the bank. You're effectively getting nothing from government bonds deliberately, because Ben Bernanke and company don't want you to be in government bonds. They want you to be in real estate. They want you to be in stocks. They want you hiring people. So there isn't anything out there. You can't really be creative.
Now we know from the last two answers, if nothing else, Robin Farzad is an Iranian Jew.
There you go. That's a big revelation.
That's a reveal on the show today. Valerie in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Brian. Hi. I wanted to call about my son's education fund. I started it in 2009 when he was born, and I had been doing some reading about how to save for college. And I started a 529, which is a state overseen fund that's managed by I forget which company does it. But I chose a moderate growth. You could choose aggressive, moderate, and I don't know, maybe just fixed rate growth. But I chose the moderate growth, and I've been contributing each year quite a bit up to the limit. And I recently talked to someone whose son's going to college, and they said, well, it didn't really grow that much, compared to how much tuition has grown, just wondering what you think about those kinds of funds. Are they worth it, and are they safe?
All right. On 529s, Robin, real quick, I know you're not here to be a personal financial advisor, but we know you can put money in that's tax-free when you take it out if you use it for the college education, right?
That's right. And it's great that you talk to this stuff, Brian, because I know you were primarily in hedge funds, you personally.
Oh, yeah, right.
But yes. No, what's nice about 529s and the option when you have time, let's say T-minus 18 years, is few people realize this, but if your money compounds at a little bit over 7% a year, annualized, it doubles every 10 years. And that's huge. Even with college costs soaring well above the cost of the rate of inflation, you want to be ahead of the game. Even if inflation is at 2 or 3%, you need to earn a positive real rate of return. So being aggressive with a kid who is just born or who's in preschool is not the worst thing in the world. Of course, it could be at a period where suppose you're doing this in the late 1960s. That would have been a terrible 15, 16-year stretch for the stock market. But if you were doing it in 1982, it would have been an epic stretch for the stock market. So you can never really time it.
And so last question, James on our comments page asks, does this mean 401ks are doing well? Because all those people who are in 401ks so got slaughtered when their stocks went down in 2008, 2009, have they been pretty much made whole in terms of those retirement accounts?
Well, the 401k depends on what you put it in. If you were primarily in company stock and it was a bank that collapsed, then you're kind of out of luck. If you were in bonds, bonds have done pretty well, but they're now lagging stocks. If you were in a diversified fund that had both bonds and stocks, let's say a 60-40 split, you've done quite well, and you've avoided many of the gyrations that have visited investors, I think. And if you consider Greece, if you consider the U.S.'s credit downgrade, all of these things that have transpired in the 5 years since the meltdown, it goes to show that it wasn't necessarily so different this time.
Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek. Warning moms and pops out there who've been out of the stock market for a while to think twice before rushing headlong into it now that stocks are doing really well recently. Thank you very much, Robin.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll observe the 25th annual World AIDS Day, which was actually yesterday, December 1st, with designer Kenneth Cole. He is also chairman of the HIV Research Group, AMFAR. Stay with us.